This is Around the A, a weekly look at the top stories, news, and interviews from the NHL's top developmental league with your hosts, David Foote and Patrick Williams on the Sports Podcasting Network.
This is episode 10 of Around the A with David Foote and Patrick Williams on the Sports Podcasting Network. We made it to 10 episodes, Pat. It's been a long road, it feels like, even to this point, and we've started to touch most corners of the American Hockey League. A long way to go, but pretty excited that we managed to get to this point.
Yeah, it feels like a player who hits a certain milestone, either goals or games, Yeah, 10's not a lot, but, from where we started and the way it came together, and, just a few weeks, yeah, I think we're doing all right for ourselves, and 10's a nice little milestone, and I think we're on our way here.
Yeah, we don't like the players, we don't do it for the milestones, but they're nice when you hit them every once in a while.
Sure.
We've got a good show lined up for episode 10 as well. We're going to dive into the Syracuse Crunch with Alex Ackerman, who writes for Raw Charge, which is the SB Nation page covering the Tampa Bay Lightning. Mario Tirabassi from the Rockford IceHogs, at least a reporter who covers the Rockford IceHogs, will be with us as well. And a whole lot more to discuss, including attendance. We put a tweet out on our socials at Around the A Pod asking you, the fans, what you think contribute to low attendance in your markets, or why you keep going back to the games. We've got some good insight from the folks. We'll talk about the impact of the Taylor Hall trade that broke at the beginning of the week, because the Binghamton Devils are going to feel the impact of that. The Laval Rocket put out some new third jerseys as well. I'll give my thoughts on those coming up, and a whole lot more. We'll remind you before we get going that you can listen to us via the sportspodcastingnetwork.com or on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. You should be able to find us by now. And we're going to start actually right here in Belleville. It's been a little bit of a Belleville-centric show, I guess, the last week and a bit. We had Troy Mann on for an outstanding chat in episode 9, and if you haven't listened to that yet, I would implore you to do so. But Troy Mann has got the Belleville Senators on fire right now, Pat. They had a bit of a blip last week, and they seem to have rebounded from that, sweeping both games this weekend past, including one against the Toronto Marlies.
Too early to start talking Coach of the Year, probably, but Troy Mann, who was in the studio last week, I think you can make a very good argument for him. 15 defensemen have been in his lineup this year. We're in December, mind you, and he has a team here that's won 8 of their past 9 going into play this week. I think what you point out is a good point. They had that 6-2 loss last week at home to Cleveland. They had come in there, won 5 in a row, kind of feeling good about themselves, and Cleveland comes in and kind of just rocked them. And then how do they respond the next night? A 7-1 win against that same Cleveland team. And that's exactly what you want to see. You want to see the coach send a message in terms of what he wants to see his team and get back to their structure, back to their systems. They do exactly that. They heed the words of their coach, and they go on a roll. And then this week, they beat a really solid Rockford team. They go in Toronto and handle the Marlies 4-1. So just a really solid team here so far. And I think, slowly but surely, Ottawa, for all the problems that they've had in that team the last couple of years, they are building a nice little farm system here that I think down the road is going to really start to pay off for them.
And Belleville gets into a playoff spot right now, leading Utica and Laval, just based on the fact that they've played a handful of less games than those other two rivals, and they're going to see a lot of each other through the rest of the season as well. So things are going pretty well, but will be interesting to see if the Sens can hang on to this pace. There's been a lot of, as seems to be the case, up and down between Belleville and Ottawa. Eric Brandstrom got sent back last week, played a few games, scored his first goal on Saturday, and then, hey, Monday morning rolls around, and he gets called back up to Ottawa. J.C. Beaudin had a pair of goals on Friday night, I believe it was, against Rockford, had five shots on goal, and Monday morning rolls around, and he's called back up to Ottawa as well. Andreas Englund, one of their steady veteran defensemen, is up in Ottawa right now. So the amount of back and forth always seems to be the big factor, I think, for Belleville and how they deal with that.
Yeah, and it was definitely a factor last season. They got them into trouble by February. They were able to really make a good go of it last 2 months of the season and really bring it down to the final day of the season, but they fell just short. But I think that would be the biggest challenge, especially depending on what Ottawa decides to do or not do at the NHL trade deadline in a couple of months. You know, if they move out, then that naturally you're going to start looking at some of the guys in Belleville and give them a shot. Obviously, injuries are another factor, but that's true of any team. I think that's the temptation sometimes when you have your affiliate close by to start pulling those guys up and down. And there's a lot to be said for that. You want to kind of put that carrot out there and have players playing for that and not feel that they're buried. I do think it can at times get a little bit disruptive, though, when you start moving players up and down multiple times per week. And they're never really quite part of one team or the other. They're never quite situated. They're never in the same role, depending on the level they're at. So that can be a challenge. I think though Troy Mann is earning his money in that regard. Working all these players in and out of the lineup and finding roles for them and bring them up to speed on the system and just everything that goes into you know, what you have to do to be a successful hockey team at any level, on top of everything that they have to do that they have to deal with as well, this being the American Hockey League.
I mean, the other thing is that Ottawa is playing all right. There was a lot of thought that, you know, Ottawa's going to be terrible this season anyway, so most of the young guys can just stay in Belleville and excel and have good solid seasons there. But it's at the point right now where the Senators are, if they keep up the run of play that they're on the cusp of potentially making the playoffs. And then if that were to happen, do you bring up guys from Belleville to supplement the roster? Like, that's the fact that Ottawa is good, I think, is throwing a whole other, wrinkle into the plans that were laid out probably at the start of the season.
Yeah. I mean, who had in December, who would have predicted Ottawa would start this week 5 points behind the Tampa Bay Lightning in the division?
Yeah.
So, you know, Ottawa's far. I mean, they were supposed to be absolutely terrible this year. Everybody was down on them. I mean, you couldn't find anybody that had anything good to say about the Ottawa Senators going into the season. And they've actually made a pretty solid showing for themselves, all things considered, considering what they have to deal with in terms of their roster and their payroll. And, you know, you're bringing a new head coach in and just all the upheaval that's been, you know, part and parcel of that team for the last number of years. They've done a pretty solid job, all things considered. And that's trickled right down to Belleville, where, you know, we've mentioned this before, that more often than not, the NHL team's problems eventually become your problems at the American Hockey League level. And that's been the case for Belleville, and yet they've been able to roll right past it and just keep winning games. I mean, and I think the biggest thing is they're really starting to build that winning culture. And you see, if you look at the most successful, you know, NHL clubs around the league, more often than not, they have successful AHL clubs, both in terms of development as well as winning. And then, you know, so the old debate, winning, does winning beget development, development beget winning. But, you know, I think they do go hand in hand. And for no other reason than you just want your players in a positive, happy, upbeat environment. And, you know, it's hard to do that if you're going out every night losing and you're out of the playoff race by January. So every win that you can get in the American Hockey League is, you know, both in terms of standings, but also just for creating the proper environment and the proper mood around your prospects is just a real key part of this whole development system that is always a little bit Todd Nelson, the former coach of Grand Rapids, called it part art, part science. And there's a lot to be said for that. You know, there's the on-ice and there's the training and the skill development, but there's also the mental development and getting guys in a positive frame of mind. So I think Belleville's doing just that and really off to a good roll. If they can pull up some points here in the next couple of weeks, they could really be dangerous.
Yeah, and they've got three big divisional games coming up this week. Wednesday at home to Utica, Friday in Syracuse, and then the Toronto Marlies make another visit on Saturday. So we will keep you up to date, although not next week, because we are going to take the week off for Christmas. We will be back with episode 11 of Around the A. I would say probably January 2nd is a safe bet for that episode to drop. Let's look at the Hershey Bears, who have finally gotten hot, Pat. They've won six in a row, and you have to think that the fan base in Hershey, again, which we talked a little bit about with Troy on episode 9 last week, has to be much more content with the way things have been going of late.
I would say it's very fair to say that Hershey Bears and their fan base are probably the most restless, demanding fan base in the entire American Hockey League, pretty much bar none. I'm hard pressed to think of a more demanding fan base. 11 Calder Cup championships. They had a dynasty going in the latter part of the 2000s. They won three cups in five seasons. Sent a whole parade of players onto the Washington Capitals. Set a league record with 60 wins about 10 years ago in 2009-10 season. So the fans there got accustomed to a certain standard, and the standard started to slip the last couple of years, and I would say it's back. This was a team that played 789 hockey in the second half last season. They had a terrible first half, completely turned around, got themselves into the playoffs, and then this past summer had quite a bit of turnover, and they've had to kind of go through that whole cycle all over again. Head coach Spencer Carberry's done a really nice job in really integrating a whole new group of players into the lineup, and Washington Capitals are starting to reload their farm system again. It's a little bit of a take some time, but some really nice goaltending there. Vitek Vanacek really is almost starting to take over the number one job for Hershey. Real solid pick, 2015 second rounder. Kind of has gotten a little bit lost in the system, I think, but quietly has gone about his job. AHL All-Star last season. The Bears six in a row. They're up to third place in the Atlantic Division. They've also killed off 31 of 32 opposing power plays. So third overall in the PK, and they're kind of back to their standard. They're going to be a really tough team here, I think, in the second half. That's always a tough division, the Atlantic Division. Always some real big heavy hitters. Wilkes-Barre Scranton's kind of back into the swing of things this season after missing last season, missing the playoffs. So, it's a real solid Hershey team, good mix of veterans and the kids. And don't look now, but the Caps have another wave of talent that might be starting to percolate there for the Hershey Bears.
Things looking up in Chocolate Town, and you talk about the fans being demanding there. I remember speaking to Brian Helmer, who has a connection to the Belleville area. Mm-hmm. He played his junior here with the Wellington Dukes. I talked to him a while ago about one of his first couple of seasons kind of as the head of hockey ops there in Hershey, and he told me he'd be sitting in his suite and the fans would just be screaming at him from the stands back into his box where he would watch the games from, just because the team wasn't doing well. So they certainly don't hold back, those Hershey Bears fans.
No, they don't. And, and that was when, they weren't a bad team, right? I mean, they were a team that, still making the playoffs and, but that's the standard of Hershey. They don't expect to make the playoffs. They expect championships. That's difficult to do. It's a 31-team league. Everybody's kind of gunning for that Calder Cup in this league. There's a lot of parity. But they've, over the last 15 years since they started the affiliation with Washington, that's become one of the premier affiliations. The deal's actually up for renewal this season, or after this season. It hasn't been done yet. Frankly, I think both sides need each other. They don't have really any other good options anyway. And it's a perfect affiliation. It's about 2.5 hours apart, Ottawa, in that regard. And in Hershey, they play in what is essentially just a scaled down NHL caliber building, a top notch facility. The players there, they're very well taken care of. The travel's really nice for a team. A lot of quick bus rides. So Washington Capitals, you have a lot to like about that setup. And I think both sides, they had to kind of get back on the same page. It strayed a little bit in the last couple of years, but certainly recently they've gotten a little bit more cohesive relationship again, and really starting to pay off. And, you know, they're going to be a force, I think, this season before all is said and done. And that West, or I should say that Atlantic division is a little bit weird. You have Providence, you have Hartford. They've gone really well. Wilkes-Barre's started well, and they've slumped a little bit. So it's a little bit there for the taking. And the bottom half of that division is a little bit weaker than normal this year. So I think if you're Hershey, you have a really good shot once you get in the playoffs. You know, and especially in this league, all bets are off. You never know what lineup will show up for the playoffs. So just get in and see where it goes from there. But yeah, that's one of the real top-notch affiliations in the entire American Hockey League. A lot of teams actually have tried to model after the Hershey model, and you know, for good reason, because they both win and develop, and that's hard to do year in and year out, but they've managed to do it.
You're listening to Around the A with David Foote and Patrick Williams on the Sports Podcasting Network. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to take a trip to Syracuse. Alex Ackerman, who writes for SB Nation's Tampa Bay Lightning page, Raw Charge, will be with us. We'll also head over to Rockford and talk to Mario Tirabassi, who covers the Ice Hogs. But first, couple more teams to take a look at before we get into those interviews. One of them being Lehigh Valley Phantoms, who, by my math, Pat, points in 11 of their first 15 games, and since then, only 5 wins in their last 15. What's going on with the Phantoms, who now are 3-7 over their last 10?
Yeah, and falling fast. They actually go down to Charlotte this week, you know, to play the Checkers a pair of games. And Charlotte, which had a lot of trouble early on, is kind of, almost right neck to neck with them. And it's a tough role right now for the Phantoms. They they've had a little bit of puck luck, I think it's fair to say. But on the other hand, this was a team where, you know, you look back to July 1st, the parent Philadelphia Flyers, they went all in, really brought in a number of top-notch free agents. I remember that day. It's just one after another after another after another of guys coming in on pretty solid, high-paying AHL deals. And they just haven't been able to really find a role. You know, some of it's been recalls, but, I mean, that excuse honestly only goes so far. Everybody has to deal with it. Certainly, you look at the Belleville Senators. I mean, a team like Belleville is not going to give any sympathy for a team like Lehigh Valley that has you know, player recall issues. But, I mean, that's you better get used to that if you're in the American Hockey League. Goaltending's been pretty solid. I will say their puck luck, though, like I mentioned, has been a little bit down. They're only averaging 7.5 shooting percentage, so that has to get up. Generally, you want to be around 9 to 10% range, and it doesn't sound like a big difference, but you start looking at, you know, a lot of one goal losses here, and you know, things like that, and it's just they haven't been able to really get on the same page. And it's been a real tough go of it there for them. But they're starting to really fall behind here early on. And it's not something you really want to make a habit of, you know. And one of the issues for them is just, you know, playing from behind early. You know, they're 1-5 when they're, you know, trailing after the first period. So that's another issue, especially if you're having trouble putting goals up. But, you know, a lot of ways, you know, defensively they're pretty solid. You know, if you look at some of their analytics, that's solid. So it's a little bit – I mean, you talk to people in Lehigh Valley and there's kind of just shrugged their shoulders, you know, trying to explain what exactly is the issue here, because this should not be a team second to last in the league in goals, not with the amount of veteran experience they have there, Cal O'Reilly, mm-hmm. Craig Carey, some real proven veterans in this league, but it just hasn't come together. And if they don't get it really on track soon, you really run the risk here of falling behind. They're already 5 points out of a playoff spot. You're not even at Christmas time yet. So, you know, if they go down to Charlotte and don't get some points there, they could be in trouble. And this is a team that you can't really afford. They had a bad collapse in the second half last season. Really need to get it on track here. But yeah, not happening so far for sure.
Yeah, and you say already 5 points back. I would, and I'm sure their fans are probably looking at it as only 5 points back right now with a couple games at hand. Lots of divisional games coming, but yeah, they can't afford to keep up this run of poor play, or else they will continue to slip even further and further behind and be right completely out of the picture. Lastly, let's look at a team that has not slowed down. We thought, hey, maybe, you know, they take a loss. Maybe things will turn around in a negative way for them. Not the case. So we're, of course, talking about the Milwaukee Admirals, who after that 13-game winning streak lost in Texas 5-1 and then have rattled off points in five straight games. Since then, a couple of those were overtime losses, but it doesn't look like there is any stopping the Admirals right now.
No, it doesn't. Even when they lose, they still are picking up points, you know, via the overtime losses or shootouts. So, yeah, they're up to 45 points first in the league going into the week, 20 wins and second overall. Four losses in regulation at this point of the year is pretty impressive. So they're just a team. Their PK is excellent. Their power play is excellent. So, you know, that, I think that says a lot when a team is solid on both sides of special teams. It says a lot, both for the players, I think also for the coaching staff, head coach Carl Taylor, who came over from the Texas Stars before last season, really has done a nice job there. And that's one, I mean, that whole Milwaukee situation, they've always really had a top-notch affiliation with Nashville going way back. I mean, back to the first season of the Nashville Predators when the team was still in the International Hockey League back in 1998. So it goes to show you all the players that come through there. Shea Weber, Roman Josi, Pekka Rinne, Philip Forsberg. You go right down the list. It's like a who's who of Nashville Predators over the last 10 or 15 years. So they have that same formula in place this year, and they're really starting to bring some guys along, and some guys are really starting to break out. Yakov Trenin, one of them, his second rounder, really started to find himself. Kind of took a while to develop, but a big power forward who's really starting to find his game. And yeah, I mean, look out for this Milwaukee team. They show no signs of slowing down whatsoever.
And can we just say, goaltending is probably playing a massive part in this. Connor Ingram and Troy Grosnick have alternated every game since the start of the season. Nobody has made back-to-back starts yet. And there's something to be said for not just having a pair of good goaltenders, but a pair of good rested goaltenders and a pair of goaltenders who seem to be able to work together as well as these two do. They've been incredible for this team, and that's a big, big part of the success.
Yeah, it's a nice formula to have. To have a good veteran guy like Grosnick, a guy who's, he knows what he is. He's an American Hockey League high-end goalie who can come up to your NHL club in a pinch to fill in. And then a little bit more of a young prospect type like Ingram, who, I mean, he had such a strange year last year in Syracuse. Ended up getting sent down to the ECHL midway through. And there are all sorts of drama and intrigue and sort of speculation what was going on, and clearly there was a falling out there between the two sides. Got moved to Nashville in the offseason and really has rebuilt his career there. 926 save percentage, but yeah, I like that balance where you're able to run one guy or the other every night, especially out in the Western Conference where travel's a little bit harder, and your early morning flights and, you know, all things like that. The more depth you can have at that position, you're going to need it at some point. And Milwaukee's certainly been able to do that. Both goalies have been absolutely fantastic this season.
Sixth and seventh in goals against average coming into the start of the week. No slowing down for the Milwaukee Admirals. Again, one of the continuing stories that we'll be following throughout the course of the season. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to touch on a few more headlines, including the end of the Roy Sommer era in San Jose. And we talked about Roy with Sheng Peng a few weeks back. If you want to go back and have a listen to some earlier episodes of Around the A, we'll talk about the trade ramifications for the Binghamton Devils and Tucson Roadrunners in the big Taylor Hall deal that made headlines. And we'll touch on a few other topics coming up in a little bit. But first, time to learn a little bit more about the Syracuse Crunch from Alex Ackerman. Again, she writes for the SB Nation Tampa Bay Lightning page, Raw Charge. She has her own Crunch podcast called Syracuse Speaks, and you can find her on Twitter at Allovimo. That's Allovimo. And she's up next on Around the A to talk a bit about the Syracuse Crunch. Thanks for taking some time for us, Alex. How's it going?
It's going all right. You're very welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
So when we've had guests on from different markets first time out, we're trying to really paint a picture for especially new fans to the American Hockey League, about what the affiliation with the NHL club looks like and what the market kind of looks like as an AHL home. And Syracuse is obviously one of those, I would say, more well-known American Hockey League markets. What's it like to cover the team there?
It's been a fun ride for the most part. I've been a fan of the Crunch since 2004, and I've been covering them, so to speak, on the internet since about 2008. So it's been very interesting. In the time that I've been covering the team, we've gone through three NHL affiliates. When I first started, we were with Columbus. Then we were with the Anaheim Ducks for two rather unremarkable years. And then the Tampa Bay Lightning came in 2012. So it's definitely been a very, not exactly volatile, but there's certainly been some variety to it over the years, especially since the philosophy of each of those NHL clubs was really different from one another and kind of gave the fans some different experiences, both positive and negative, depending on which years you're looking at. So, you know, overall, I think that the market has remained really strong. And I do think that the current affiliation with Tampa Bay has definitely helped the fan base stay interested in the team and draw in new people to the Onondaga County War Memorial.
Yeah, 25 years as an affiliate team for at least some organization in Syracuse, that's got to say a lot, I think, about the fan base and hockey fans in that city.
Yeah, Syracuse has originally, they were home to quite a few teams in many different leagues. And, of course, they famously were the ones who won the very first Calder Cup back in the late 1930s. So over the years, there has been a different variety of leagues that have come into the city. But when the Crunch came in back in 1994, had been a long time since a professional team had been playing in the city. And there were a lot of people who didn't think this team was going to last. So it's definitely a credit to the front office and the people in this market that the team is still here 26 seasons later.
Alex, what do you think has been this secret to help it last? This is a difficult business in the best of times to really make a go of it. What has Howard Dolgan and the rest of the Syracuse operation been able to do that has worked?
Recently, two Calder Cup final appearances has certainly not hurt.
Yes.
You know, any time that you can get that amount of longevity out of your season, especially once all of the college seasons, you know, Syracuse University is probably our biggest competitor as far as sports teams in the area, their basketball team and the beginning of the hockey season, their football team kind of put some dent in our attendance over the season. But, you know, especially if you can get their seasons to be done and our season is still going, there's really nothing else to talk about. We have a minor league baseball team here. But other than that, that's really it as far as the Syracuse market goes. So it's really nice to be able to kind of press that professional edge to the fact that this is a team that's a member of the second best league in North America. And I think that getting the word out on that specific subject has really helped the organization when it comes to getting fans to come in. That's a pretty big selling point, especially with the way that lately the Lightning has really been taking our players, developing our players, and using our players. I think that our play-by-play radio announcer, Lucas Favalli, tweeted out today that we have had over 50 players come through Syracuse that have appeared with the Lightning, which is unprecedented for this organization. You know, Columbus tended to kind of develop to trade, not develop to keep. And Anaheim was only 2 years, so most of those guys that played here have moved on in that organization. But we have had guys go up and stay up, and I honestly think that that partnership and stressing that you're really kind of seeing the stars of tomorrow with this team has definitely helped bring people through those doors.
Now, you've kind of had a front row seat to that development philosophy, really both in Syracuse and across the hockey world. So much has changed in the time you've been around the team, and then you've had three different franchises come through as well. How would you sum up the Tampa Bay development philosophy especially as opposed to what you had with Anaheim and Columbus.
Overall, I honestly think, and it's kind of cliched, but I think that their philosophy is slow and steady wins the race. The Lightning is not at all interested in rushing people. They're not interested in throwing people up to the big club until they're ready. In fact, the couple of times that they have done that, Brett Connolly comes to mind. There was that whole thing with Jonathan Drouin a couple seasons ago where he wanted to go up, but the Lightning didn't think he was ready, and that caused a lot of problems. And then when he finally did get his chance, he really didn't do very well. And just so I think overall, they have really dedicated themselves to making sure guys are ready, that they have the experience, that they have the professionalism, that they have the better developed game. Currently, like we're looking at guys like Mitchell Stevens, who just played in his first NHL game last night. He's playing in his second one tonight. There was a lot of chatter around him. He's been an AHL All-Star, but it still took him a couple of seasons before the Lightning said, okay, we're giving you a chance now, you're ready. Alex Volkov has been another recent one where it took him a little bit before he got that cup of coffee. And the Lightning kind of felt like maybe this isn't a good fit right now. So we are going to send you back and hopefully you'll earn your way back up. And I think that that's the other part of it, is that whole earning your way up. There aren't any fast tickets here. There is no, well, you have a high ceiling expectation, so we're going to rush this and we're going to call you up now and it'll be fine. The Lightning, even with the change in general manager lately, they don't go for that for the most part. They really try to stick to that developmental philosophy of making sure guys are ready so that they have the best chance to succeed.
We're chatting with Alex Ackerman, who writes about the Syracuse Crunch for Raw Charge, Tampa Bay Lightning's SB Nation page. You mentioned the general manager change, Alex, and we covered the Grand Rapids Griffins last week and talked about the impact that Steve Yzerman has had on going back to the Detroit organization. What kind of impact has he left on the Tampa Bay Lightning organization and on the Crunch since going back over to the Red Wings?
I think that a lot of that philosophy that I was just talking about came from Steve Yzerman. His reign, the guys that he drafted, they were really the guys that started to come through Syracuse when this affiliation started. And a lot of those guys are still up there. And not only was his draft philosophy really impactful at both levels of the organization, his ability and his staff's ability to find kind of diamonds in the rough has also been huge for this organization. When you look at guys like Yanni Gourde, who are now impact players with the Lightning, guys like Jonathan Marchessault, who are really successful over in Vegas, those guys have been a big part of this organization's history too. So it hasn't just been being able to find guys to draft and then develop. It's been kind of finding those ECHLers that maybe haven't had the chance, or those AHL guys that just haven't managed to find the right organization. Carter Verhaeghe comes to mind when I think about that particular one. So I think that he really set that foundation where we're not just looking for that first round draft pick that's going to play in the NHL in a year or two, and that's all we're paying attention to. We need to have that depth in the organization, and we need to go outside of the draft and into less traditional avenues to try to find it.
One of the things that really has changed a lot is teams having their NHL parent club nearby. And Syracuse doesn't have that luxury. So is that a challenge at all for that market, or is that something that they've been able to overcome? And, there's obviously not a lot of natural connection between Syracuse and Tampa, but they seem to have found a pretty nice balance there overall.
I think that we should talk to Corey Conacher about that question.
Yes, yes.
he's been called up and down. He's ridden the plane more in the past 2 weeks than I think I have in my entire life at this point in time. But honestly, I think that overall, the geography hasn't mattered as much as I thought it would when we first partnered up. I know that some of us were nervous that this affiliation was only going to be a couple of years, and then the Lightning was going to follow the trend, which was either buying a team and moving them closer or possibly trying to get Howard Dolgan to sell and move the team out of Syracuse to move them closer. But I think that, honestly, what the Lightning was looking for when they came into Syracuse was an area that had more opportunities for their farm team to practice and less time on the road and more opportunities to play teams that are closer when it comes to geography. And I think that if they moved a team down closer to the Lightning, they're going to lose everything that they were looking for by putting their farm team up here. You know, really down south, there's not a whole, the South has not seen kind of what the West has when it comes to this infusion of AHL blood. So overall, I think it's been working out pretty well. I know that too, a lot of Syracuse fans enjoy heading down south once the weather turns kind of cold. I've done it myself a couple of times. It's kind of nice having a parent club in a warmer climate that you can maybe plan a vacation around. So I think when you look at the Snowbirds, when you look at the fans who want to go down there, and then you also every now and again that get those kind of odd people from down south who want to experience the winter, and they'll come up north. So overall, I think that the partnership is actually working out better than maybe even I expected.
It all comes back to, I think, cooperation between both clubs and I guess in 2019, it's a little bit easier to make the distance seem a lot less than it is at times. We talk about the change in general manager. How about behind the bench? Ben Grew is a guy that we know here. We had him on the show a few weeks ago. Pat talked to him when they were in Hershey. What has a guy like that done for this group as far as really steadying the ship and being a key in the development of the key prospects?
I think that he really brought an expectation of compete level. You know, his favorite term is pace. He loves to talk about pace. He mentions it very often during the season that he wants his guys to play with pace. He wants them to be out there. He expects hard play. He expects back checking. He expects a full 200-foot game from his players. And when he doesn't get it, I think that he is pretty honest about what's going on, what he's disappointed in, and what the team is looking at to fix. And before, with our previous head coach, we kind of got the feeling that he was playing them to develop them. The expectation was that they were going to play a nice, safe game down here. Nobody was going to get hurt. And then when the Lightning needed players, they were going to go up and they would be able to fill those roles. But Ben Grew is kind of looking at it as if they're not winners down here, if they're not playing in those high-stakes games, if they're not putting up the competition that they need to, then they're not going to be ready to fill the roles in the NHL that the Lightning is going to require of them, because they're not going to have the stamina, they're not going to have the compete level. They have to develop those things too. And so I think that his philosophy on how he's pushing these players is definitely one of the biggest differences that we've seen behind the bench over the years.
One of the players I think is really going to be a real test for Ben Grew is Alex Barry Belay. Led the league, or tied, I should say, the league leads year with 34 goals. Off to a good start again this year. In your mind, does he have a bona fide NHL future, or is he going to be one of those classic 4A players, guys that are right on that line but can't quite make it over?
I think that he does, and I actually reached out to my colleague at Raw Charge, Justin Godfrey, who also assists me with covering Syracuse to answer this question, because he tends to pay more attention to the nuts and bolts than I do. And I think we're both in agreement that he does have a future, but we say that with an asterisk, and that asterisk is a pretty big one, especially in the Lightning organization. He needs to show that he can be more responsible when he doesn't have the puck. And, you know, Justin talked a lot about how Barry Boulay is a super creative offensive player. He mentions that he has elite vision on the ice. His passing ability is absolutely out of this world. But the Lightning really emphasizes being able to play that 200-foot game. And they are not going to call him up and immediately put him on a line with Steven Stamkos. So he has to show that he can be that effective player in multiple situations on multiple lines and not just expect to be called up to the NHL and be a star, kind of like he was in juniors and like he has been in the AHL. And I think that that kind of ego check, if he can have that ability to take what he has learned and be more responsible without the puck and show that he can have that kind of defensive responsibility and also understand that it's going to be a little bit of a journey for him even when he does crack that NHL roster, I think he'll be great. But whether he can do that or not, you know, I don't know. It can be hard sometimes, especially when you found such instant success in places, to kind of check that ego a little bit.
You know, I look at the Syracuse team and, you know, I see a lot on paper, you know, and at times I see a lot on the ice, and then other nights I'm like, this doesn't seem like the same team. And I'm sure you know that feeling watching them every night. It's been a little bit of an up and down start here, but we are now 2 months into the year, so or into the season. At what point, you know, does it go from kind of up and down to they really need to start to pull everything together? And what have you seen hasn't quite worked yet for this team?
I really think that they are reaching that point this month, to be honest with you. I think that if December comes and goes without this team finding some consistency, then we're going to be in trouble. You know, one of the positive things about Syracuse's schedule for the month of December is that they're actually spending a lot of time on the road, and they're not just taking a quick trip to Belleville or a quick trip down to Binghamton. They're headed down to Charlotte. They're going over to Bridgeport. They're going up to Providence. So they have those short jaunts during the month as well, but there's also longer trips and longer weekends away that I'm really hopeful will allow this team to get to know each other, because honestly, that is what I'm kind of struggling with when I watch them. It sort of seems like some games their communication is good, they're clicking, they're doing well, passes are fine, things are okay. And then other games, it seems like it's the first night of the season and they're playing with a bunch of guys that they don't really know. So I'm not sure if maybe that has something to do with it. Our schedule has been very kind of random this month, this season so far. There hasn't been a lot. And during the month of October, the team was practicing a lot and not playing a lot, which I know something that was something the coaching staff was kind of bemoaning. November had some more consistency, but December really has a very consistent Wednesday, Friday, Saturday schedule with some travel and some longer trips in between. So I'm really hoping that those trips away and those opportunities to spend more time with each other will really help this team kind of gel a little bit more.
It's going to be interesting to see how the Crunch can pull it together. Again, a team that always seems to, when playoff time comes around, at least be in the mix and be able to make a push. Alex, if fans want to follow along with your work and follow the Crunch through you and Raw Charge, how do they find your stuff?
So I am on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Allovimo, at Allovimo. And I am kind of in between an official title right now with Raw Charge. Technically, I'm just kind of calling myself their aunt right now. we're in the process of kind of trying to reorganize a little bit. But definitely, Raw Charge is currently where I am posting my podcast. You can also find Syracuse Speaks, which is the name of my podcast, on all of the major platforms. It's on Apple's podcast platform. It's on Google. I post it through Anchor, so it is there as well. And my oldest blog is pretty much defunct right now, but when I do get it in my bones to write something, it will still be welcome at Raw Charge, so it will definitely be going up there.
Well, we'll be following along for sure. We appreciate you taking the time for us tonight, and maybe we'll catch up again later on in the season.
All right. I would love that. Thank you so much.
This is Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network. Again, you can find us wherever you get your podcast, including sportspodcastingnetwork.com, Apple Music, Spotify, Google Play, you name it. We're there. Just remember to search for the whole title of the show, Around the A with David Foote and Patrick Williams. That should make it pop up for you a little bit easier. And once you're there, subscribe, rate us, and give us some feedback as well. You can get us on social media at Around the A Pod or via email aroundtheapod@gmail.com. If you've got thoughts on the show, potential guest ideas, if you don't like what we had to say, please, we'd love to hear from you. The feedback is the breakfast of champions, Pat. That's what I was always taught. So the more we can get, the better off we'll be.
Yeah, and instead of any suggestions you have in terms of guests, I mean, we can probably get them. That's kind of the neat thing about the American Hockey League is there's the barrier, you know, the wall's a little bit lower. And, you know, if you want to hear from a coach, player, trainer, general manager, you name it, you know, we've had some ideas about referees maybe we'd like to talk to. So we have, there's all sorts of possibilities. So, you know, no, I would say pretty much no idea is too crazy to send us. And we enjoy the feedback. If you want to engage with us on Twitter, that's cool too. Another thing that's what makes this a fun league is fans, media, teams, players, everyone. It's a little bit of a smaller circle, and it's a little bit easier, I think, for everybody to interact with each other.
Big thanks to Alex Ackerman for taking some time for us. We're going to learn more about the Rockford IceHogs coming up in a few minutes with Mario Tirabassi. But first, a couple more headlines to touch on that broke over the last week, including out of the West Coast in San Jose, where longtime Barracuda coach Roy Sommer has been promoted he'll be on the same bench and in the same building, but he'll be with the NHL club. That's big news, given the tenure that Sommer has had with the AHL team out there.
Yeah, that's one of the kind of the quirky things about it is as much as he's been around, now his big promotion back to the NHL is in the same building. He walks down the hall from the Barracuda room to the Sharks room at their training facility. And, you know, what a journey it's been. I mean, 62 years old, 22 seasons. He was over 1,600 regular season games, 1,638 to be exact. Started in 1998. I mean, think how long ago that is in a lot of ways, both inside and outside of hockey. Mm-hmm. And you think about, you know, your average player coming in this year, if he's a 20-year-old typical rookie, he's born in 1999. So Roy Sommer's was in the same position before most of those kids were born. So
crazy.
It's really remarkable, and the way he went through four cities with the affiliation, and you just look at the players that he coached over the years, it's like a who's who of San Jose Sharks: Logan Couture, Joe Pavelski, Mika Kiprusoff, who went on obviously to the Calgary Flames, Evgeny Nabokov, Jonathan Chichu, Brad Boyes. I mean, just like a who's who of high end players and stars, but also guys that were a little bit more of a raw talent, like a Doug Murray. You know, that's maybe one of his proudest achievements. You know, when you speak with Roy Sommer, is that a guy like Doug Murray came in with a lot of size and, to be quite honest, not a whole lot else. They were able to mold him both through the hard work of Roy Sommer, his staff, as well as Doug Murray. Molded him to an NHL player, and he was able to play a number of years at that level. And I think that's really a real credit to what Roy Sommer does. And, you know, he's going back to where he was way back in 1997. He spent a season there as an assistant, and now he's kind of come full circle there for the San Jose Barracuda and the Sharks. So it's a real testament, I think, to him that, you know, he was – you know, obviously the Sharks thought very highly of him, took care of him over the years, kept him in the fold. And he was always a guy, I think, who was very comfortable in his own skin. He didn't necessarily go chasing after NHL jobs. He knew he was good at what he did. He was a good teacher, and he enjoyed it, and he wanted stability for his family. And I really found a nice little niche for himself. He'll be a first ballot NHL Hall of Famer without a doubt. There's not even a question. And he's just kind of everything you would want to have in a coach. He's been that and more over the years.
And obviously, we wish him the best as he moves down the hall and continues on with what should be a fairly easy transition, given the number of guys who came through the Barracuda system under him now playing in the NHL. It's very similar to Sheldon Keefe in Toronto. And a lot of the guys coming up from the Marlies are guys that he has experience with. So I think that's a great move for the Sharks and should be a great move for him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the kind of guy he'll blend in real nicely. He's kind of a real easygoing personality. There's not a big ego there, so he'll fit in. I think he'll be a real asset for Bob Bugner there as Bob Bugner gets kind of his situation settled there. A lot of upheaval right now with the San Jose Sharks. They were expected to be a lot better than they have been. And I think having a guy like Roy Sommer, a guy who can be a little more lighthearted and maybe turn down some of the tension around there and reduce it, I think that will be a nice thing for the Sharks to have. And like you said, the familiarity factor as well. So, you have to be happy for a guy like Roy Sommer. He's quite a character, and in this league where it's hard to have much longevity at all, to go 22 years, that's a lot of bus rides. he's managed to do that. And he's seen the whole evolution of the league from the 1990s when it was kind of the rough and tumble enforcer league, not necessarily as maybe high priority on development, and now it's come full circle, or really it's kind of the way it is now, 2019 going to 2020, and it's so youth oriented and skill and development oriented. He's been there to see all of it right from the front row, so he's an interesting guy to talk to. I've gotten to know him over the years a little bit, and he's a fun personality, both in terms of hockey and just he can really, one of those guys that can kind of really talk about anything in life and works well with the young guys. He's 62, but he fits in well with today's 20-year-olds, and he's kind of flexible in that way. And that's not always easy for coaches to do. A lot of them struggle with that, but he's always been able to sort of change with the times and keep up with the kids and change his methods and his tactics. And it's worked really well for him over the years.
It has, and again, we feel like that'll pay off pretty well for the San Jose Sharks. We're going to get to Mario Tirabassi, who covers the Rockford IceHogs, in just a few moments. Do want to touch on those Laval third jerseys and some attendance numbers as well. Maybe we'll get to those after we chat with Mario. But before we get to that, we do have to talk about the big trade in the NHL. Taylor Hall headed to Arizona, and a pretty good package coming back the other way to the New Jersey Devils. They'll get a conditional first-round draft pick in 2020, a conditional third-rounder in 2021, plus Nate Schnarr, Nick Merkley, and Kevin Ball in exchange for Taylor Hall and Blake Spears. It's going to have, I think, a much bigger effect on the Binghamton Devils probably than it even will on New Jersey or Arizona by acquiring a guy and losing a guy like Taylor Hall. These are some legitimate prospects that are now in the pipeline that will be coming through Binghamton.
Yeah, and I know that some New Jersey Devils fans were underwhelmed with the return, but I think considering the circumstances, considering Taylor Hall may be a rental in Arizona, I thought the Devils did pretty well for themselves. And you start with Nick Merkley, and we had Brett Ferrer on a couple weeks ago, and he really got into that topic. Nick Merkley, first round pick by Arizona back in 2015, but rookie season really tore up his knee pretty badly and was out for about 9 months. And that's obviously a huge setback for a young player that he had to overcome. He's done that. I think he'll get a fresh start somewhere else, and that will be good for him to really get that. Certainly a real nice, if from a Binghamton Devils perspective right now, something they badly needed. They need some help. They've been fighting it all year. They ended an 8-game losing streak this past weekend, but they have a lot of work to do if they're to get back in the playoff race at all in the Eastern Conference. And we'll start with bringing in a guy like Nick Merkley, a guy like Nate Schnarr, give them a little bit of help that they need. And you never know what else the Devils may have. I should say New Jersey Devils have planned, but certainly will help overall. Just getting some bodies in that system. That's what they need, and go from there. But I think all things considered, New Jersey, got a fair return. Maybe it's not overwhelming, but I think it's reasonable. And, I think it's something they can build on. It was pretty clear that Taylor Hall and the New Jersey Devils marriage was not going to go past the season. So they made the best of the situation about as well as they could.
It's always tough when the player in question makes it pretty known that he wants out. It's tough to sometimes get, much of a return at all. So I would say that that New Jersey did all right. They're going to have to really wait and see, I think. For a guy like Ball, who is still in the OHL right now, and Schnarr is only in his rookie season in the American Hockey League, but had 102 points in 65 games with Guelph en route to an OHL title in 2018-19. And the only other thing that the Devils give up is Blake Spears, who was a point-per-game player in junior, and just hasn't quite reached that potential, I would say, in the American Hockey League, just 28 points over 115 games. So there's a lot of upside coming back in that deal.
Yeah, I think so. I think for Spears, that would be a good move for him. He needs a fresh start pretty badly. He's seen a lot of losing since he's turned pro. He'll go out to Tucson. He's going to be with one of the top teams in the league. It'll be a good shot in the arm for his career. So I think all things considered, from an AHL perspective, all three of these players will benefit. And if you're Nick Merkley or you're Nate Schnarr, you look at that New Jersey Devils team, there's going to be jobs open there at some point. Especially considering that they're the return for Taylor Hall. I think they'll get every shot possible to make it there. And the Devils are a team really struggling this season after some pretty high expectations. So if they can go into Binghamton and help that team, then they'll set themselves up well for future work with New Jersey.
We're going to head over to Rockford now. Mario Tirabassi is going to join us. He covers the Ice Hogs for The Rink, and you can find him on Twitter at Mario_Tirabassi. That's Tirabassi. And he's up next as we learn more about the Rockford Ice Hogs this week on Around the Eight. I want to talk first about the affiliation between Chicago and Rockford. What's Rockford like as an AHL market, and what's the strength of the relationship like between the AHL and the NHL club?
Well, the affiliation has been ongoing since the 2007-2008 season when Rockford joined the AHL. Rockford as a hockey market is pretty good. They definitely enjoy the Ice Hogs. They support them. It's a good barn to play in Rockford, and I think it's at capacity it can get pretty rocking. And they've had some success over the years. 2 years ago with Jeremy Colleton's first year with the team, was that the 2017-18 year, was their best year in the AHL. And the fan base was behind them wholeheartedly. And I think the affiliation works pretty well between the two teams. There's been a good number of players that have gone through the Rockford system that have gone on to play for Chicago and have a lot of success in Chicago and the NHL in general. A couple Cup winners have played for the Ice Hogs as they moved on to Chicago and were part of the that 2010 to 2015 run. And it's always it's always weird when you have people say, well, why aren't the Chicago Wolves the Chicago Blackhawks affiliate? It makes sense, they're in the same city. That's always been a good question. But between Rockford and Chicago, it's about 90-minute drive depending on traffic. And I think there's a good relationship between both franchises. And I don't think Chicago is going to be displeased with what Rockford's been able to do. And I think I can see that affiliation lasting for a good while.
Mario, when you look at, for so long, the Chicago Blackhawks obviously were, winning Stanley Cups, perennial contender. And so the role of the American Hockey League team there is a little bit different. They're asked to patch some holes in the lineup, as you know, a player here, a player there. But now the way the Blackhawks in the last couple of years have, you know, obviously they're not what they once were. The role of Rockford's had to change. How have you seen that that adjustment and transition unfold from where you've sat there in terms of what they expect the IceHogs to produce to eventually go to Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, when Chicago was going through their run of you know, of Stanley Cup success, you know, it was built up with a couple players that came through the system. You know, in 2010, they had Troy Brouwer and Christopher Stieg had come through the system. Antti Niemi had come through Rockford as well. You know, guys like Brandon Saad went through the system and came up and had a lot of success. But I think for the most part, a lot of Chicago's, you know, successful players through that cup run, you know, I don't really see a lot of correlation between, you know, guys that developed and then became, you know, key pieces for the long run. I think that a lot of guys came up, maybe played a part for a short while, and then either, you know, their role never, increased from there or eventually moved on to other organizations. I think one of the most divisive players in, you know, the Blackhawks fan base that kind of fit that position was Teuvo Teravainen. He came in, he was a high draft pick by the Blackhawks and, you know, developed through the IceHog system for a little while. And then, you know, when he got up to the NHL and got his shot, even though he was a little inconsistent, you could kind of expect that for a player of his age at that time. But he did come up big in some key moments and played a key role in their 2015 Cup run, and then ultimately has to be dealt to Carolina as part of the Brian Bickle trade. And then it goes on that Teravainen develops into quite a player for the Hurricanes. So that trend was kind of the most prolific case. But I think, you know, there's been a lot of times where, you know, some prospects have been parts of deals where, you know, guys that came up through the system ended up being pieces in trades that Stan Bowman had made that ultimately didn't end up working out. And then you see those guys move on to other organizations and have success, and it kind of stings a bit. So as they were going through that cup run, those moves at the time were, you know, you hate to lose a guy, but you see why they made the move. And then hindsight being 2020, it's hard to look back and say, well, you wish that they wouldn't have made that move and that player would still be with the organization. I think now that we're seeing, you know, Blackhawks have some struggles, obviously missing the playoffs the last 2 years and, you know, having not won a series in 4 years, you know, the fan base is getting antsy. They have been used to success for a long time, and the fans want to get back to that success. And Chicago now, I think, is starting to, you know, reload their system a little bit. They were kind of thin on top prospects for a couple of years because of, you know, the success they were having at the NHL level would sometimes sacrifice some of their top prospects. Now they've loaded up a little bit now, and you see with injuries this season, some of those players coming up, obviously Adam Boqvist is, you know, of a guy that's come through and played some time in the system. You know, he's come up this year and he's been, you know, he was a lot of eyes on him in Rockford and then in Chicago as well. And, you know, he's transitioning. Obviously it's just his first year pro. But I think he's been given a big role due to injury. And hopefully he ends up, you know, being the player that, you know, he was projected to be when he was drafted 8th overall.
What are you what kind of transition have you seen from Derek Haina? He came in last year, obviously, after Jeremy Colton got called up. So that's a difficult transition already in season. And I remember speaking with him, you know, later in the season last year, and he admitted as much. But what kind of growth have you seen from him now going into his second season in Rockford?
Well, yeah, I mean, with the transition that that Chicago made to fire Joel Quenneville, bring up Jeremy Colleton, and Derek King was brought into his first head coaching role of his career behind the bench, and you know, I think he did a pretty good job. He was given an interesting roster. I'll say it that way. Not, you know, last year Rockford had a hard time on the offensive side, and it really was a kind of like a pulling teeth to get them to get into games where they scored 2, 3, and 4 goals a game. You know, they rode a lot of good goaltending last year with Anton Forsberg and Colin Delia. So their success was up and down. They fizzled out a little bit towards the end of the season as they were in the playoff hunt. But I think when he came into the role, you know, it wasn't really his, I guess you could say, his roster that he was kind of trying to mold. It was more, you know, the organizational roster. And I think what I gathered from being around the team last year and talking with him is that he tried to let the players maybe dictate a little bit more of, you know, leadership in the locker room and, you know, leadership on the ice this year and going into his, you know, a summer where he knew he was going to be the coach and he knew he was going to have control over, you know, what was going to be going on as far as Rockford was concerned. I think he's taken that and ran with it a little more. He seems to be more assertive in his coaching style. You know, the Ice Hogs, Jeremy Colleton really didn't like naming captains, and I think Derek King came in with an idea of having a captain. He's been more in favor of that, and I think the leadership roles is something that he's focused on and knows is key to have, just for the locker room itself being so young, having players to look to you know how the pro game works and to learn from them, but also from a coaching standpoint, having kind of an extra guy as a part of his, you know, quote unquote a part of his staff that he can go to maybe get his message across to the players kind of through a middleman. So, you know, he had Chris Versteeg at the beginning of the year, and Versteeg ended up leaving the team for his own reasons, but he replaced him with Tyler Sakura, and that's been you know, that's been beneficial for both Derek King and Sakura. And I think King is, you know, I just think that the assertiveness and the confidence in him as a head coach, I think is what's changed from last year to this year. And I think, you know, given the fact that the Ice Hogs are a really young team, and, you know, with injuries and roster movement between Rockford and Chicago, they're relying on a lot of new faces recently. You know, the success that they've had over the last 19, 20 games has been, you know, it's been impressive to see that they've been able to sustain it given all that movement. So I think he's gotten more comfortable in the role, and I think that that's translating to, you know, his message and what's happening out on the ice.
Chatting with Mario Tirabassi, who covers the Rockford Ice Hogs for The Rink. You mentioned Tyler Sakura. It's an interesting story with him and his brother Dylan, who's at the time of this taping up with Chicago. I actually went to the same school as those two guys and their sister in high school.
Oh, wow.
But what's it like to see, you know, their kind of chemistry on the ice when they're both there? It's kind of an intriguing story to have two brothers who are so close in age, who kind of took the same route through, you know, junior A hockey to the NCAA, and now they find themselves in the same organization at the pro level. It's an interesting story.
Yeah, and their dynamic is really cool. You know, Tyler's the elder of the two. You know, he had a more grinded out career path to get to this point. You know, he was not the highly touted prospect coming out of college that Dylan worked himself into being. And you know, he battled it out in the ECHL and eventually got up to the AHL with the Ice Hogs around the same time that Dylan was making his professional debut with Chicago, and then ended up, you know, getting his first full professional year starting out in Rockford. You know, the first season that they played together, it wasn't really a lot of time where they spent on the same line. Mm-hmm. You know, Tyler was more or less deployed as a, you know, as a workman style player, kind of a, you know, grinder player, killing penalties, things like that. Whereas, you know, Dylan's a playmaker. He, you know, he has a game that has a high volume of shots on net. He's looking to produce a lot of points, generate a lot of offense. So their styles kind of are on opposite ends of the spectrum. But, you know, this season, Derek King's really deployed them more often than not when they're both in the lineup. They're on the same lines or they're being paired together on special teams. And I think, you know, having Tyler being able to play off of, you know, that chemistry that they have, just, you know, having played together for, you know, years as when they were younger as kids and growing up together, you know, having Tyler being able to play off of Dylan and his playmaking ability has helped him offensively this year. And I think Dylan being paired with Tyler and kind of learning a little bit more of his style of play, where he's, you know, a bit more physical, you know, works harder in, you know, in the corners and, you know, below the net and things like that, especially defensively too. Those were things that Dylan needed to work on from, you know, when he first made the jump to the professional game to this point of his career. You know, he's been back and forth with the Blackhawks, kind of up and down. He's really produced at the AHL level at a fine rate, but hasn't really been able to see that translate to the NHL. And I think playing with Tyler this year on the same line, they've, you know, their styles have played off each other pretty well. And I think that they've both taken a little bit of each other's game, you know, for themselves. And I think for Dylan, that's really rounding out his game pretty well. And for Tyler, it's good to see, you know, because he had a big year in 2017, 2018. He was a big part of, you know, Rockford's success as they went deep into the playoffs. And then last year, it was a bit of a step back. He had some injuries he was dealing with, and the production wasn't where it was the year prior. This season, it's he's at the pace he saw in 2017-18, and currently leads the team in points. And yeah, I think both guys playing off each other, it's really benefiting them this year. And they're both at good points in their career. And we'll see what Dylan ends up doing with Blackhawks, see how long he stays up there, you know, with Chicago dealing with some injuries and trying to find the right pieces for their lineup. It could be, you know, a good opportunity for him to get into the NHL and actually make it stick this time.
Let's talk a little bit about goaltending, because when the Ice Hogs were here in Belleville last week, I was chatting with the broadcaster there, Joseph, and the assistant general manager as well, about the kind of carousel that's going on there. They had three goalies on the road trip last week, and that can be a difficult thing to deal with at times. How do you think the team has been handling rotation of netminders right now?
They've had three healthy goalies all season. You know, it's been an interesting dynamic with, you know, usually teams just having two, and if someone goes down with an injury, they call somebody up really quickly from, you know, the ECHL or anything like that. But they've had three AHL caliber goalies all rotating this season. And you know, it was interesting to begin the year knowing that there were going to be three of them, given that Kevin Lonkinen was coming off of a pretty incredible summer, helping Team Finland win gold medal at the World Championships, and Colin Delia was coming in basically penciled in as the number three goalie in the Blackhawks organization behind Robin Lehner and Corey Crawford. And right up until, you know, the free agency period in the summer, and Robin Lehner just fell into the Blackhawks' lap, a lot of people were getting used to the idea that it was going to be Crawford and Delia as the 1-2 in net for Chicago to begin the year. But, you know, Lonkinen and Delia, they were the 1-2 going into Rockford. And, you know, Kevin Lonkinen's had an incredible year. He's really stepped into that role as the go-to guy for the Ice Hogs. And it's been interesting to see how Colin Delia has had to work through a pretty subpar start to the year. You know, his save percentage is below 900 right now. You know, he was coming off a year last year where, you know, him and Anton Forsberg were two of the best goalies in the league, and probably gave Rockford the best tandem in the league in that. And, you know, Colin has said that, you know, it's you can't really bank on what happened last year. You're not going to have that same success if you're not, you know, trying to evolve your game. And, you know, having the three goalies gave an opportunity to Matt Tompkins to come in and, you know, give him some well-deserved time at the AHL level. He had been, you know, grinding it out with the Indy Fuel and the ECHL for the last few seasons. And, you know, he had success with Indy last year, and it just, with the logjam that the IceHogs had in net last year, he didn't really have the opportunity to come up and, you know, really really display what he could do. And, you know, given Delia's struggles and the three-goalie system that they're using right now in Rockford, you know, Tompkins has been able to step in, and, you know, he's done very well. He's got a 9.21 save percentage, you know, 4-2-0 record in six games. I mean, it's been a breath of fresh air to have him come in and be able to, you know, when he's called upon, be able to deliver. And, you know, he's given Colin Delia, you know, a bit of a hard time getting consistent time in net behind Kevin Lonkinen, who's assumed the starter role. But all three guys are friends. They work together well. You know, having talked to all three of them, they understand that the three goalie system is pretty unique, but they're working through it, and you know, they all want to push each other to be better and push each other to succeed. And for Rockford as a whole, it's working out. There's been times where, you know, Matt Tompkins has stolen a game, Kevin Lonkinen has definitely stolen a game, and Colin Delia in his last two starts has stopped, you know, 65 out of the 68 shots that he's seen. And, you know, he's had some good success in his last two starts. So hopefully that can build up. And, you know, the three goalie system, when they're all healthy, is unique, but it's working for the IceHogs this year.
Mario, when you look at that blue line there, you have, well, you've, Boqvist is up right now, but you had two first rounders to start the year with him and Nick Baudin, and then you had Chad Kriss coming in. Dennis Gilbert's been there. You know, what's the overall state of that blue line, and how are some of those young guys progressing here as they move forward?
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of the year, when all hands were on deck and everyone was healthy, it was interesting to see how you know, Derek King was going to rotate in his six defensemen, because, you know, you mentioned you had Baudin and Boqvist were, you know, two guys with a lot of expectations on their shoulders. Dennis Gilbert had over the last season into this year had established himself as, you know, one of those guys that's kind of on the fence between the NHL and the AHL. And you know, they have just an interesting rotation going on. There are guys that are, you know, having to be healthy scratch just because it's a numbers game, and, you know, you're trying to give guys ice time because they deserve it, and you're trying to give guys, you know, maybe rest if their play is struggling. And it's hard to just say, well, these are our top six guys night in and night out. You know, when guys fluctuate, obviously, with as is life in the AHL, guys go up, guys go down. You know, it's been a challenging balancing act to get, you know, enough defensemen the ice time that they deserve. But you know, Nicholas Baudin has kind of come along in the last few games. You know, he's been one of those guys that's been the you know, the healthy scratch on a few nights. But, you know, he started a little bit slow. Looked like he was kind of still taking some adjustments to the professional game. But it seems like now that they're you know, getting into the thick of the season, they're, you know, 26, 27 games into the schedule, seems like he's started to settle in more to the professional game, and that's really benefiting him and the team as they're going through this period of injuries with Chicago, meaning that, you know, guys like Gilbert and Boqvist are up with the Blackhawks right now. Adam Boqvist, yeah, he again was a guy with you know, a lot of expectation, a lot of eyes on him, and he got off to a slow start too. You know, it's a lot of the rookies that Rockford has to, you know, ice every night got off to slow starts. So, you know, no one was really out of the gates, you know, hitting the ground running. But Boqvist started to turn it around a little bit, and you know, ended up going up to the Blackhawks for a couple of games. Got some confidence there, came back, had a three-game stretch where he scored, I think, all five of his assists he has this season came in a three-game stretch once he came back from the Blackhawks. And then it was a couple of games where, you know, he was generating offense but not really producing points, and then got called back up to Chicago with the injuries that they're dealing with. So, you know, he's been up and down, obviously noticeable. It's, I think, more or less with him just being able to find some consistency at both ends of the ice. Obviously, his offensive game is, you know, his biggest asset to him as a player. it's kind of just seeing how he develops defensively. And, you know, with the injury Chicago's dealing with, he's getting a lot of ice time at the NHL level now. So we'll see if and when they get healthy, if he ends up sticking around there or does make his way back to Rockford. And yeah, you mentioned Chad Chris, you know, he's a high draft pick that the Blackhawks had a couple of years ago, had a decent college career, came over and, you know, when his college career ended, he had about, I think it was about 8 games with the Ice Hogs at the end of that season, and came in and, you know, really, was used a lot and looked like he was, you know, going to be a guy that was going to make the transition really easy. And he's actually been one of those players that's up and down and in and out of the Ice Hogs lineup this year. So, you know, that could be hurting his development a little bit. But, you know, it's kind of just the rotation that the Ice Hogs have had to deal with, given the kind of talent that they have on their blue line. And just, you know, Derek King trying to get everybody ice time. It's difficult. But, you know, I think for all the rookies, it's starting to kind of turn a corner here as we're, you know, getting to this point of the season.
Rockford is a young team with a lot of potential and a lot to look forward to. Mario, folks want to follow along with the Ice Hogs and your coverage. Where can they find you?
I write for therink.com, the-rink.com. You can find all our work. We cover the Blackhawks organization top to bottom, NHL, AHL, prospects, everything like that. We are at on Twitter at the Rink Official, and then our Chicago division is at the Rink Shy, CHI, and then yeah, on online for me on Twitter, I'm at Mario_Tirabassi, TIRABASSI.
Thanks so much for doing this with us.
Yeah, of course, no problem.
Getting set to finish up episode 10 of Around the A with David Foote and Patrick Williams on the Sports Podcasting Network. Big thanks to Mario Tirabassi, who covers the Rockford Ice Hogs, and of course to Alex Ackerman, who covers the Syracuse Crunch. We will, as we do every week, put out our graphic with how you can find more of their work, and we'll tag them in all our social posts and stuff. Again, hit follow at Around the A Pod on Twitter and Instagram and all that, and you can stay in touch with us and our guests and continue to get a whole lot more info on the American Hockey League and its stories. We were going to talk about attendance, Pat, but maybe it's something that we should push to our New Year's show, if you will. Attendance likely to pick up over the holiday season, but it's just something that I think we're going to need a little bit more time to go into.
Yeah, we've already gotten some good feedback from fans, different variety of markets. You know, this is a league where you have markets like Chicago, Toronto, San Diego, then you have Belleville, Binghamton, Utica, so kind of a wide range of fans and fan bases. But like you said, that post-holiday, that's kind of the dividing line for attendance, and that's where you really want to see teams that maybe have not put up great numbers so far. You really want to see them take off, you know. I think certainly down in the States, that's always an issue for teams. They're competing against a lot of things in the fall, football, baseball, and all that. So they're able to, you know, really focus on that second half and make a go of it that way. So yeah, I think it'll be a really interesting discussion. And, you know, we'll learn a lot, I think, from the fans and really getting kind of their perspective, because, you know, just in the few answers we've already gotten so far, they really haven't held about back. They're pretty honest in what they're saying and what they see from their perspective.
Yeah, and when we love the fan perspective. Again, we put out a tweet earlier this week at Around the A Pod on Twitter, just asking, you know, what you see as contributors to low attendance in your market, if you're in a market with low attendance, or what contributors do you see to high attendance in your market, or why do you go to the games and continue to go? We'd love to hear your feedback, and we'll discuss that a little bit more on our New Year's episode, which at this point, launch date is likely going to be January 2nd. We're going to take the week of Christmas off, as I'm sure most people are, and well, off the podcast anyway. There's lots of hockey to be played, so I'm sure we'll both be at the rink over that that period. But we're going to take a week off the show, and we're going to be back New Year's to kick off 2020 in a big way.
Yeah, it should be fun. It's always a real kind of hectic, busy time of the year for teams, both on, obviously, and off the ice. A lot of teams do community things this time of the year, and you know, different holiday events. So that can be an issue for coaches, certainly at this time of year when players maybe have family in town or there's just other attractions. So we'll be back in 2 weeks, ready to go. And before you know it, we'll be getting into the All-Star game and everything else. And then it'll be down time for the playoff stretch drive. So things go fast in this league, and the season's already moving pretty quickly.
And with that, I think we should wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and or Happy Hanukkah or whatever it is that you might celebrate. Hopefully everybody gets a chance to enjoy the holidays with family and friends, and maybe get out to a game yourself as well, because, again, there's lots of action around the American Hockey League over the next week or so.
It should be a really interesting weekend coming up. We talked about the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. They're down in Charlotte for a pair of games. Pretty big implications for both teams. Have had tough starts, so we'll see how they do. And there's not much of a break for teams. It's not like the OHL or college hockey where you get a pretty sizable holiday break. Most of these teams will play Sunday, and Boxing Day, the 26th, they're right back at it. So it's kind of a catch a breather and then jump right back into things. And most teams right after the holiday, they squeeze a number of games in, and they play four or five games that week. And they're trying to make, back to that attendance, and they're trying to make some hay while families are off and fans have a little bit more free time. So it should be fun, and it's always a great time of the year for hockey.
It always is. We'll wish you the best of the holiday season, and I hope you'll join us again as we kick off 2020 on episode 11 of Around the A coming up. Have a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks on Around the A.
Thanks for listening to Around the A. Be sure to tune in again next week. Find Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Interact with us on social media. Give us your thoughts using the hashtag Around the A and follow us at Around the A Pod.